Welcome to the Strength Talking Shop podcast. I'm your host, Matt Smith. We talk all things strength, coaching, fitness, nutrition, powerlifting, strongman. If it involves a barbell, we're going to talk about it. We are presented by Optimum Nutrition Athletics. We all know that protein is the key to muscle recovery, and Gold Standard's best-selling 100% whey protein provides 24 grams of protein that mixes easily using just a glass and spoon. Gold Standard 100% whey is made in their state-of-the-art facility. It's banned substance tested by Informed Choice. And with Optimum Nutrition Athletics program, you can get different items such as their Pro Gainer, which is their mass gainer, protein snacks such as their crisp bars, wafers, cake bites, and almonds. And after dominating the sports and nutrition industry for over 30 years, newly created Optimum Nutrition Athletics brings that same trust and quality that knows how to put convenient options for protein in the hands of athletes who desire to become bigger, stronger, and better at their sport. If this is something that you're interested in getting into your facility, reach out to Dave Harvey of Optimum Nutrition Athletics. Down in the show notes, he's got his email. Dave and the team at Optimum Nutrition Athletics are absolutely amazing. They'll get everything that you need. I use their products every single day. I use the Gold Standard 100% whey for my post-workouts, if I need something quick for protein on the go throughout the day. And also, if I need to grab a snack, I'll just grab one of the almonds, some of the cake bites, and then also the crisps. Absolutely love the crisps and the almonds. So make sure you reach out to Dave Harvey of Optimum Nutrition Athletics, and thank you for being our sponsor. Hey guys, Strength Talking Shop podcast. Excited to have Bruce Mason, elite powerlifter, stud, been on before, reoccurring guest. What's going on, Bruce? Anything crazy happened here recently with you?
Well, we just had a phenomenal meet up at the Summer Slam up in Erie, Pennsylvania, put on by Rob Farrell. I did take first, which was a phenomenal day and honestly not expected, and totaled 28:45, which actually turned out to be the sixth highest total of all time, regardless of weight class.
Unbelievable.
So it was a hell of a day.
How did you feel going into that morning? How did it feel going into that meet? That morning, were you thinking, this might be a good day?
So actually, you know, I mean, walking into the day, like weeks out, I mean, I was nervous, and, you know, we all second guess ourselves a little bit. And, you know, if training's not, you know, perfectly spot on, and it certainly wasn't for me, you know, I came out of a meet in late May. Okay. And my goal was to try to squat 1200 pounds. And that goal is still on for maybe the end of this year, beginning of next year. But I failed at that. And I end up, you know, I bombed out of the meet, which really catapulted me into what turned out to be the best meet possible. But failing at that meet really made me work extra hard, really made me think about all the things that I needed to work on. And, you know, I reached out for a lot of help from a lot of people and turned around, and I made a couple changes walking into this meet. But it honestly, failing was the best thing that was the best thing that happened to me coming into this meet. And so, you know, after that, you know, I second guessed myself a little bit coming into it. And then about a week and a half out, I finally kind of made peace with myself. And the morning of the meet, I was the calmest I've ever been walking into a powerlifting meet. I mean, we always have some nerves and, you know, we're a little anxious always to get our first squat in. But, you know, it was oddly calm, and I was focused, and I was just excited to be there with, you know, my buddies. And there was five incredibly strong people that anybody could have taken that day, just depending how it went. And it just turned into a phenomenal day.
What were some of those changes that you talked about that kind of helped from May to the meet in July?
So, I mean, even walking into May's meet, I mean, for me, putting 1,200 pounds on my back was a bit of a mind fuck, honestly. You know, I'm very human at this point. You know, I like to say that my technical performance will always keep me safe. But I mean, I reached out to people and I had some really long talks. I mean, I almost hired a sports psychologist to work with me because I was literally dreaming about 1,200 pounds killing me and crushing myself because this isn't 200 pounds, isn't 300 pounds, this is weight that you do anything wrong with and something's going to explode. And we're all human. And as I get older, I think about all the things that I should, as take care of my family and support my wife. And on, I have my goals and then there's normal life. So I had a couple of nice long talks with my buddy and it kind of just set myself straight to go in there and to commit 100%. And honestly, after you can, there's a certain time frame I forget that he would literally say that you could see a different person squatting and lifting because my goal in my head and my mindset was just straight on. It was one thing and one thing only. And at the meet, I ended up bombing out, which was fine. But what I changed was the people that I was around and the people that I trained with. And so my strength and my downfall is I'm a very calculated person. So everything is written out, everything is percentaged out. And I have ranges of numbers of what I want to hit in the gym on a regular basis. And I try to follow that because, if I'm having a good day, you know what? I'll push a little bit more. But I always like to take one extra rep before I really, push it that last 5 or 10 pounds or even 20 pounds or whatever. And the gentleman's gym who I went to was Rob Farrell's, representing 814. Very thankful for him, but he was the person that pushed me out of my comfort zone. He was the person, I'd tell him the numbers that I want to hit, and he would say, "Hey, you know what? You're gonna hit your top number today." And, that's jarring for, somebody who's very, very analytical. I'm thinking about everything. He was, just do it. So he was my next mental push, and really week after week, I fixed my setup, I fixed my feet, I fixed my commitment to standing up, which was truly what it was. And if you watch, any of the lifts or anything for lately, my stand up is a whole new person. And that sets the tone for the squat, because if you don't take it out right, it's either going to feel like 1 million pounds or it's going to feel, a lot lighter than it's supposed to, which is the point. But working with him, having him push me and really walking in there and just trusting him and his crew and Logan and everybody really made the entire difference of my training just from May all the way up to this past meet.
What I find to be fascinating is you're not even talking about exercises or changes within your program. It's mental and technical things, two things a lot of lifters take for granted and don't really work on as much as they do as the stuff inside of the gym. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean it's completely personalized for everybody. And the nice part was, I was there to, help others with their technical work and everything else. And they were there to make sure that, you know what, Bruce, we're here to push you out of your comfort zone. They see something greater than even I do. And it excites me because I mean, Rob himself, I'm going to end up talking about other people more than me, which is the whole point of this, because everybody needs to know this shit. I mean, Rob Farrell, I mean, he benched 1,000 pounds at 198.
Insane.
So every third week, I'll drive 2 hours. I mean, I drive 2 hours every Saturday to now spot and deadlift with them. But then I'll also book back every third week to bench heavy. And the dude's 100 pounds less than me, benching the same as me. So, if that doesn't put some fire underneath my ass, what else is going to? I mean, we just had a 70-year-old come to the gym yesterday. So I drove out there yesterday just to help out and be there and support everybody. But there was a 70-year-old who benched 600 pounds to a one board. So, I mean,
Unbelievable.
if that doesn't push you or anything else, I mean, you could be on the cusp of, maybe you got 6 more years, but this dude's fucking killing it.
Like having that environment, people pushing you in the right direction, but also seeing something, like you said, maybe that you don't see at times. That's why it's important, like, to have good training partners, a good crew around you and everything. But I want to backtrack a little bit back to the meet day, right? So we talked about that morning of, you get there, you know, you're in the warm-up room getting ready for squats. Tell me how it's going from there.
So warm-ups were going great. Everything was very smooth. The banter in the back was top-notch. I wish I could repeat any of it on this forum. But between me, Bob Merck, Chris Delafov, you know, all the warm-ups looking good. And then I walked out to take my opener, which was 1,100 pounds. And I took 1,100 all the way down. I did a little bit of an up-down motion. I went down, came back up, and they cited me for a red light on the up-down motion, which is perfectly correct. And then I was like, okay, no big deal. And this was the part where I knew I felt good because I went up 20 pounds anyway to 1,120. And I was still calm. I was like, okay, no big deal. I was like, you know, I know what I did. And I mean, I unracked it a little bit on my toes and I ended up swaying back to 1,100 pounds. And I just kind of was like, well, let's see if we can take this down with the, you know, with a full sway. So, you know, I shouldn't have done that. I should have waited a little bit longer. But, you know, in that moment, you think a lot of things are a great idea. And then the second squat, I thought I went down deep enough, but I just missed depth, just ever so barely. Came back up with 1,120, you know, not a problem. And in fact, I was so excited that I thought I hit depth. Like I came back up and I end up laughing all the way through the top of the squat. And they're like, you know what, sir, try again. So sorry. And at this point, you know, my wife is telling me that I'm not listening to her all the way down. And I was like, okay. So, you know, I had one more chance to get a squat in. So I took 1,120 one more time and I stood up, I went down and people are telling me like, you know, what do you want us to do or anything else? And I told my wife, I was like, lie to me. I was like, I want you to lie to me. I was like, when I'm 1 inch high, tell me I'm 2 inches high. You know, just instead of like 2, 1 up, when I'm at 1, call me at 2 and I will keep going. I was like, you know, lie to me. Tell me I'm pretty. Like, I don't care. Like, whatever you need to do to get me down there because, you know, I'm excited, obviously, you know, and I get antsy. We all get antsy in the bottom of a squat. And, you know, because I want to squat just deep enough to get 2 white lights and then come back up. I don't care about that 3rd white light. I never have.
Oh, it takes 2.
Yeah, thank God. So I went down and she, you know, called me at 2, 1. And then I hear, you know, I get called up finally and I come up and I get, you know, 2 white lights because my right hip, I will never hit depth with that. We all have a high hip. And so finally I was, you know, and the funny part is like, I have these moments as I go through all of the lifts where, you know, I'm very calm. I take a second before everything. And at the very end, I let out all that excitement and all that like pent up, you know, I don't call it rage or, you know, but it's all that power that's let out in the last couple seconds. And I walked out of the squat rack and I was like, I earned that. Like, cause I knew how low I went and I came back up with 1,120. And so finally I'm in the meet and I end up walking out with the biggest squat. And to note, so I was then, I think, I was 55 pounds ahead of the guy underneath me. And the person who won first place was going to have the biggest total. So at this point, I had a bench somewhat, you know, pretty good to keep my lead. And my biggest competition was Bob Merck. And so I ended up squatting 55 more pounds than him. And then we walked into bench. Once again, everything's feeling actually quite good. He opened up heavier than I did. I think he opened up like 905, whatever. I opened up at 870. I went 870, 900. He went 905, 940. And then he went 1,000 pounds. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, is he really going to do this? Or is he just, you know, playing game, because we all, it's a chess match at this point, because we all want to win, you know, at the end of the day. So I ended up passing on my third, because I thought to myself, whether or not my energy was really worth taking another bench. And when I benched 900, I brought it down, and I could feel my upper back slowly fatiguing out. So I actually, also on the video, things to point out where I bring down 900 and I bring it down, and you see me almost kind of dump it just onto my chest, just a little bit. And then I say press, and I heave it up because I lost my back tightness at the bottom. So thank God. So thank God I had enough energy and just enough, you know what, screw this, let's go for it. And we threw that back up. But I mean, one of the most impressive things I saw was Bob came out and he ended up benching 1,000 pounds. So I took a 55 pound lead down to a negative 45, you know, pound lead walking into Dallas. So it was going to be, you know, it was going to come down to the last couple of deadlifts, you know, to see who really, you know, was going to take it. So, I mean, that was really impressive, and he needed it to stay in the meet. And he ended up opening up very light just to make sure that he got his bench, which I think the 1,000 pound bench was the second time anybody's ever benched 1,000 pounds in a full powerlifting meet besides Dave Hoff. So he opened up super light just to get that in. And then he pulled 710. I wound up at 765. And then I went 805. I pulled that. He missed 760 or whatever it was. And at that point I won. And I pulled 825 in the last one just for icing on the cake. And man, I was just so excited. And my goal for the entire meet was obviously always, you know, kind of to win and come out healthy, but I really wanted right around a 2850 to 2900. 2900 would have been a perfect day for everything. And that normally doesn't happen, but it was a very good day anyway. And ended up total the 2845. So my prediction was close of what I was going to total. But I mean, the meet was well run. The judging was super strict, but it was fair to everybody going across the board, which you can't complain about. You know, if they're going to ding me on something, they're going to ding somebody else. So, you know, it was Wayne Pullum, Sean Mendelson, and then I believe it's, I forget the gentleman's marked last name, I think. Bobby Miller. Hopefully I didn't mess that up, but all three of them were, you know, very fair. They were spot on the entire time. And I mean, the head judge was in your face the entire time, you know, screaming at you to get the lift. I mean, he was more excited for you than I think some of us were when we'd go out to take our lift.
I loved your squat video when you pretty much kind of jump out of the mono there and shout, man, it's really, really priceless. But it's a small little intricate things that you talked about is what end up leading to victory. The bench, passing on the third bench. I don't think people truly understand how fatiguing a full powerlifting meet is. Like, for you to be able to, I guess, to set the ego to the side, to be like, I'm not, and like understand the where your body's at. Did that kind of come from knowing of experience of one past meets, but also two from this training cycle on what the deadlift could probably look like for you too as well? Because I mean, you just said it yourself, you're down 45 pounds going into those deadlifts.
Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, it's knowing myself and knowing the competition. I mean, all of us are friends at the top. I mean, so we all know each other's weaknesses. We know how strong how each other is and everything else. So I knew that to make myself having the best day, I knew I had to squat pretty well. And then I knew I wasn't getting much more out of the bench. And I knew from past meets that my upper back really has played a huge role in obviously securing the deadlift and my glutes. And I mean, the bench itself is a full body exercise. So, I mean, I'm squeezing from the very bottom to the very top, and you can notably see my legs shaking from how hard that I was holding onto a 900-pound rocking bench at the top and that I somehow held onto.
It's a great video because, like you said, I thought it was wonderful because, like you said, the full body aspect of it, like you truly, you're rooting every part of your body into that bench.
You know, and it's funny for, I mean, for yourself and any other powerlifter, you know, walking on a squat, so, you know, all of us feel pretty good. And then we bench and all of a sudden our bodies are pretty sore and messed up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just, I mean, my low back felt fine up until after bench. I was like, this is starting to catch up, you know?
That's it. The same thing happened to me with the last meet. I thought everything was preparing for 300 on the bench and I walked out with a 275, and it was simply because, like, when I failed on my second attempt with 275 was the exact reason you just said. I felt really fatigued and I was like, oh my gosh, like, I didn't realize how much that those three squats beforehand had really done me in for the bench press and everything like that.
And I have to admit that I've changed up my training a little bit where, I mean, especially training 2 hours away on the weekends, you know, I'll hit my max squat, I'll hit my deadlift, and, you know, I'll do very little accessory work. So really I need to get my volume work in and I need to keep my GPP up and my conditioning up somehow. So during the week at our home gym in, you know, Akron, Ohio, with my buddies and everything else, I get all my volume squats in, I get all my accessories in, and, you know, the hard work is really put in two entirely different days by doing completely different exercises. So, you know, one day, you know, we'll be squatting 1100 plus, and then I'll be back in the gym with, you know, 500 pounds on a squat bar with, you know, some different accommodating resistance. And I'll be doing, you know, 10 triples or 10 doubles or, you know, however many sets I need to. And I'm more fried, honestly, normally after my volume days, just because my muscles become so pumped and it really makes you have to have perfect technique. Because if you start to fatigue, you know, you have plenty of time in between your max attempts. You're only going to take, you know, two or three max attempts on a weekend. But after set four, you know, you got six more to go. You really have to focus and really push hard against, you know, your belt and your legs and everything just to stay in position. And I really think that, you know, carried over a lot just to the conditioning portion to last through a meet.
How do you set up your band, your combination resistance on those volume days? How do you just set it up in general with your program, or how do you set up that program in general?
So a long time ago, a gentleman once told me that I should loop the bands around the bottom of the mono and loop it around the bar. And then if need be, then you can loop it extra around the bar, almost like bunny ears, just depending of how much you need. But the difference is, and I told this guy a long time ago, and I was like, you know what? I was like, I need more resistance. I was like, I'm a, you know, big squatter. I need more poundage. And you know, it was the same idea of more is better. More is always better. Well, unusually in these comments, more is worse, especially over time. So even for me, so I make sure all my band tension, all my chain, no matter what I'm using, goes to an almost 100% deload at the bottom. So on my speed days, if you want to call them, or my volume days, I'll use a camber bar, but I will choke the band on the bottom of the mono, but instead of putting the band over the weights, like you see most people do, I put the band over the bar on the bottom. So when you stand up, you have the tension. And as you come back down and sit, you have the instability and the full weight. And then you drive back up. So you have the momentum of the eccentric pulling you down quickly. And then you have the stability that you have to face at the bottom, and then you have to force it back up with the speed.
Oh, that makes sense. I like that a lot.
And in my personal opinion, you know, I mean, this is just what works for me. But I find that if you use too much bands or too much chain, it'll create an anchoring effect because it never lets go at the bottom. So you always have tension pushing through. So when you go to a straight bar and straight weight, when you go to sit back, people have a really hard time keeping stable because there's nothing pulling them into the ground to letting them functionally find their foundation.
Gotcha. So it's almost like you said, anchoring them down to where they aren't completely understanding, like, I need to be more stable in this position because it's doing it for them, basically.
Sure. And the thing is, like, you can still use 200, 300 pounds or 100 pounds or however much, you know, how many resistance you want. It just has to dissipate at the bottom.
Right.
So it just may look like more bands, but really, like, so like for me, I think the most band tension I used was I put a blue looped over the bottom and over the top, and I still got close to, you know, I think 175 to 190 pounds of band tension. But in the grand scheme of things, not that many people are just using a looped over blue. They put it from the bottom all the way up and they get 250, you know, pounds of tension. And I found that that was just too much for me, and more bar weight and less resistance over time was the magical effect.
Interesting. Interesting. Cause a lot of times you'll hear more, like you said, more, let's put more bands on.
Sure. Absolutely.
Which is very fascinating. Cause like I said, typically that's not what you hear, but for you, you found exactly what you need. This is what I find to be very interesting with your lifting, Bruce, is like, you're a master at understanding like your gear, but also understanding the equipment you're going to be using and like where it's going to be fitting in. I can see that you talked about in the beginning, the analytical side of you, like you're very analytical in like a lot of things that you do. And I think that's why you've been so successful to find what has really, really been able to have the best carryover for you. Cause what might work for you might not work for someone else kind of thing.
Sure. No, I mean, absolutely. And I find that, you know, I mean, even the classifications of people using, like, you know, they always say, like, if you squat 400 to 500 pounds, you know, only use 100 pounds of chain or whatever else, you know, and that really does come true to a certain point. But once again, I'm really finding that even myself, and I've been working with a few other people just for fun, right, just to see how it works out. And they've gotten consistently stronger and their technique looks good all the way through, from bars with a combat resistance all the way to a straight weight, because they have that added built-in stability component that they have to deal with. So, and like the funny part is, even when I was training for the meet in May that I tried to squat 1200 at, I only put 1200 on my back really once or twice in 6 months. And all my resistance and everything else that I used was all probably 50 pounds under 1200 at least, because I was just trying to keep up my momentum and my speed all the way through up to the meet. And if I knew I was fast enough, and I knew if I had enough control at the bottom, that I had a good chance of doing it.
Right.
Well, I mean, I had a lot of unracked issues and some weight problems. It's probably insulin resistance, but I can't even say that without, like,
we're both talking before the podcast and we both have those, our fat faces and everything, we're both feeling extra fat this morning, so
feeling cheeky. But no, it really turned out, I mean, when I squatted the 1100 that day before I went to 12, I should have took a smaller jump in between. But, you know, what I learned from squatting from 11 to trying to get 12, I mean, was just, it's an entire, like, lesson in itself. Because
right,
my rack height changes, you know, my body changes. I had to put the rack out a little bit so I had less sway on the bar. I mean, even standing up with it, I mean, there were so many little different nuances with, you know, just 100 more pounds, which sounds ridiculous, but, you know, the rack has to go down because the bar is bending more. So you're in a different position standing up,
right,
but really leading up to it, it was just, you know, the most resistance I had was probably, I did chain, and the most I had was 200 and maybe 50 pounds of chain was my most ever accommodating resistance. But I just kept up the bar weight, and as time went on, I dropped off the resistance and I increased the bar weight.
And I think that's interesting. You talked about the tiny little changes that you had to make just for 100 pounds, right? The body weight changes. Like if you gain 10 pounds or if you lose 10 pounds, right? So like for instance, my last meet, this past meet I had, when I started the year, I weighed around 215 and I competed at the 198s because I just simply wanted to lose weight again. I mean, that's 17 pounds, 16 pounds. Like it's gonna feel different when it comes to the meet day, and especially with gear. I mean, how important is that with your gear as far as like the weight fluctuations and like the stuff that you just talked about and everything?
It's honestly even more important. I mean,
Right.
because at least you don't have to worry about things fitting perfectly. So, I mean, after this meet, I don't think we talked about it on camera, but I actually end up changing out my squat suit for one squat session before this actual meet coming up.
Yeah.
And once again, I'm somebody to never change anything. Ever. I will fight it out to the end. I will try to make small alterations of the same thing over and over again. And my buddy Logan would literally stretch out my squat suit every week I was there because my legs would get a little bit bigger. I put a little bit more weight on. And we end up cutting actually part of my squat suit off at the bottom. So the leg portion, we cut a half inch off the leg of my OG Leviathan. And I end up throwing it out, not throwing it up, but I threw it out for the meet and changed over to the LUP, which is essentially a customizable squat suit. You don't get as much out of it, in my opinion, but for what I don't get out of it, it always fits. So, I mean, if my weight fluctuated too high, just like in that white suit, I can't get down. I can't hit a squat, and then there's no point in doing a competition. So I had to, throw caution to the wind and just say, hey, you know what? I was like, this gamble is more important than me not hitting a squat.
Right.
So I had to switch over. And once again, as my wife would say, if I listened to her sooner, I wouldn't have been in this pickle. Because I mean, she's around me all the time when I squat, when I do everything. And, she gives me a little hints of, hey, you know what? Maybe you should try a different squat suit. I'm like, no, I'll try a little bit longer. Hold on. Like, give me another week or two. And then all of a sudden I have 1 week left and I'm like, shit. Maybe we'll try the other squat suit.
Sounds like you need to be listening to her a lot more often. And two, if anybody's out there, you need to follow her because she puts out great content, but she herself is an amazing lifter.
And Nicole, you will make a cameo here eventually, just to let you know. She just got home.
There you go, guys. Nicole will be in making a cameo soon. So, I mean, to kind of go back to this, I compete as well. There's a lot of people that listen to compete and stuff like that. What would be your advice to the powerlifters out there right now that you've kind of learned a little bit over this last, when you trained for the squat in May and then from May until July? I mean, to pretty much having a flawless meet, man.
My God, I mean, honestly, the biggest thing I can tell anybody is to stay with it. I mean, even a small snapshot from last year, I mean, when I got really sick and I had to fight my way tooth and claw back up until November of last year, which was really a short period ago. I had the best meet of my life up until now. And then what was interesting is my mindset has really changed. After my last meet, I was satisfied, but I didn't know what to do. I was kind of at a crossroads of, I mean, I still want to train, I still want to do something, but I had no idea what I wanted to do. So that's
Right.
why I was like, you know what? I was like, I'm gonna set myself an Everest in front of me. I'm gonna see if I can take it down. And that was gonna be my 1200. And then that didn't happen. So that's still obviously on the calendar at some point in the next hopefully year. But after this meet and doing so well, I'm satisfied again, but I've never been more hungry to compete because I'm always reminded of after you do well or after you get a lift that you've tried really hard for and everything else. It's I live for that 5 seconds, that 10 seconds after you complete a lift. that rush of just pure adrenaline and pure excitement of accomplishment that you took, you know, at this point in my journey, 14 years, you know, it builds up over time. You know, it could be 3 months of the hardest training of your life. You know, it doesn't matter who you are. It's when you have that accomplishment of hitting a goal. And I'm reminded of it every so often, and we lose sight of it. And that's why, you know, it is important to compete once or twice a year, just to do something, just to remind yourself that, you know what, this is a rush. And if this isn't a rush, then maybe you should go find something that is more enjoyable. Because, you know, some people do this, you know, when you're older, some people do it when you're younger. But for me, it's at this point, it's just reminding myself in the true love of, I don't say the iron and sound real, you know,
cliche.
Yeah, but it's just that rush and the excitement of your own achievement and working with, you know, a ton of different people to make yourself better. And at the end of the day, I mean, yeah, I did well, but I mean, I trained at Lexan for 3 years before this. They helped me. I'm training at Rob's now, Pharrell's gym. They helped me. You know, all the people in between who, you know, gave me advice or, you know, I reached out to say, hey, what do you think about this? Hey, what do you think about this? It's just incredible of how far you can go if you take your time.
You talked about that rush after the lift is over. And it's so fascinating. It's such a great feeling when your meet's over. You know, I was so excited when you put your post-meet recap up. And how cool is it when you see all the people that are saying, like, good job, or they texted you, or they reached out to you, or, you know, we talked before, Eric, how many people were there with you, working with you throughout the day? Like, how thankful does it make you, man? And, like, just excite you to, like, okay, I'm ready to do this again. You know what I mean?
And you know what? And that's the exact thing of why I want to do it again. And that's
exactly.
Oh God. I mean, even setting up for the squat and everything else. I mean, even coming up for my last pull, I mean, they're waiting for me and people are yelling at me and just screaming for me and just trying to get me amped up when really I'm the most oddly calm lifter I've ever been in my life this past weekend. And people are looking at me like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, it's just the amped up version of everybody else that gets put into, you know, myself. And as I set up, you know, my spotter's in my ear going, let's go, you know, the side spotter is going, you know, take your time, hold it, you know, every little cue and everybody wants you to do so well, but it's not just about me. It's every single person that they're doing this for. You know, I mean, I always make the joke when they're spotting you with, you know, they're your biggest fan at that point because they don't want anything to go wrong. Yeah,
exactly. Oh. Oh shit. Go ahead.
I mean, and then so like the cool part was like I went up at the day after I competed, and you know I put a hat on. You know, it's no longer my day, and that's the only part about powerlifting that sucks is after your day, it's over. You know, I wish that more people could experience like the high that comes out of this, and I think what meant the most to me was not just the winning, but it was the total that I put together and see my name among other people's names that, you know, was so highly respected and sought after. I think that's honestly the coolest part about this.
No one can ever take that away from you. No one's ever going to be able to take that away from you whatsoever.
But, you know, the cool part is like Sunday I went up and it was all about the benchers and it was a bench only day. And the one guy from Georgia, Tony Carlino, asked me, he was like, hey, can you help me? I go, yeah, sure. So, you know, I drove back up 2 hours the next day after being hit by a freight train. You know, we helped him. We helped out whoever needed it for the benching. And at the end of it, you know, you go home and it's over. And it's just part of the turnaround time. And that's why you want to do it again.
It's so cool, though, because you're willing to give back. You know, you reached out to me, you said, hey man, I want to get back on the podcast. I want to tell people the story. I want to help people. I mean, like that's what's going to move the the powerlifting community forward, right? It's people like yourself that are going out helping other people at the gyms, to have a crew, like you said, that's helping each other out. And you said that's been a theme of this podcast. You've reached out to people that helped you, you helped out them and stuff like that. I mean, it's a community, and that's why I love powerlifting so much, because you'll see the person that's 70 years old at the meet that's lifting, and everybody's cheering just as loud as the guy that's squatting a grand or whatever it is. That's why it's such an awesome sport, man.
100 pounds or 1,000 pounds, it's all the same. It doesn't, you know, exactly. It truly doesn't matter. I mean, like I said, I mean, like, I got my God-given break, honestly, you know, when I went down to Elite FTS and I met one of the guys there, obviously, and he ended up coaching me for 5 years, and it didn't cost me a dime. It was just hard work. So, you know, ever since that mentality of, I mean, really, of, you know, what is it? Live, learn, and pass on. I hate to just bring that up too. But, I mean, you know, they really do their bit. And, you know, the gentleman really helped me out. And since then ever, you know, I help people out because I was given everything. You know, obviously we have to pay for our gear and stuff. But, you know, advice or training or anything else, I've never paid for anything. And it's not right for me to ever require payment from anybody else.
Exactly.
Because it's just the right thing to do. Like, sometimes, you know, it'd be nice, but, you know, I stand by my core values of, you know what, I was given everything in this. I'm going to give back as much as I can. And you know what? It'll speak for itself. I don't need to do anything.
Yeah. It's a special man, special person. Dude. But to go back on that though, you know, you talked about, they're never going to be able to take that total away from you, man. So what does the future look at as far as like understanding of like, hey, where can I go from here? Where's the next steps of the process?
So, I mean, honestly, like I think I have a lot more to give out of my squat. So the goal is A, to do like, I hate to call it a squat only contest, but basically I'm going to do a full meet at some point and I'm just going to squat. I'll go for 12 and then I'll, you know, if I can, I'll coke it out on bench or deadlift or lift something light. But I want to do that because that's only 14 people have ever squatted 1200 pounds. And I want to be number 15. And I think that'd be awesome. I mean, it's a huge goal and I hope I get there. It's just when, you know, how much time am I going to put into this? And then honestly, I mean, after looking at this weekend, I don't think 2,900 is really out of, you know, contention, you know, or 2,875. You know, I hate when people, you know, total 2,000 or like 2,200 coming up next. But, you know, it's small jumps. And, you know, if we do everything right, we take our time, you know, it'll come. But I'm really excited to see what I can push out of myself in the next, you know, year or so.
So it's all like about that, all about having that process, man. Like you're enjoying the process, it sounds like, more than ever.
And you know, it sounds silly. I mean, somebody asked me like, well, what meet are you gonna do next? And honestly, I said I'm done this year. After this meet, I'm done. I need to recover. And I have a lot of things that I know I need to work on. Right. I mean, even just to take me to the next spot. And I was like, you know what? I was like, I don't think anything else is going to be as exciting for me. I don't say that in a bad way this year. But you know what? You know, my wife is going to compete this year sometime. You know, my buddies are doing it. And I'm happy just training right now. I want to get stronger. I feel like the last 3 months or 2 months has me been more just trying to figure out what to wear and how to hit depth in squat than more training than anything else. I think there's, I'm, it's just an exciting thing. I don't know.
That's awesome. Go ahead and bring Nicole in. Let's have her do her cameo. I got to ask her a couple questions. Bring her in.
All right. Hey, man.
Nicole. Hi. Hey, how there. Are you? Good. What was it like for you watching Bruce go through all this?
The last meet. It was pretty emotional, especially towards the end. I know, like, after he pulled that last deadlift, I had tears in my eyes, and I just like ran and jumped in his arms because I was just so proud, and I want it bad as he did. So it was awesome. And like he said, I think it was the most calm overall, like all day he was. I mean, he's never like an angry lifter really, because that's just like wasted energy. At least, I mean, I'm sure when he initially started, he probably was that person, but over time, especially this last meet, he just overall was pretty calm and, you know, channeled his energy where he needed to.
What I love is, you know, being the spouse and everything like that, like being able to like help push him forward and everything like that, like you being on this journey with him too as well. Like he told earlier, like the squat call and everything, like that stuff to me is like just so beautiful and awesome to see. Like this truly is the power couple right here. I always say to people, like the Masons are the power couple.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So I want to shift to your lifting real quick though. You're going to be competing this year. Yeah, to her. What can we expect?
Well, I just competed in June down in Eaton, Ohio. It was an APF meet run by
Chris Smith.
Yeah, it was an awesome meet. I would do that meet again in the following year, any year. It was very well run. So my goal is to squat at least 450. My bench is slowly coming along. So bench, you know, mid 200s.
We have the same length arms.
Yeah. So that's trailing along. Yeah. But I did get a new band shirt like Bruce has. Yeah. So I'll start training in that as well. Maybe do another metal ballista meet at some point. But yeah, I'd like to definitely squat at least 450, get that bench up, and then deadlift 400.
I'm going to toot her horn for a second. But so she weighed in at 112 pounds. 111 pounds. And she squatted 446.
Unbelievable.
She benched 204. 205. Yeah, 205. And then as me being, and this is obviously the complete different, and this is where I changed from lifter to coach. On her last pull, on her second last pull, I put her to 370 because she was looking a little tired. And I, you know, it's my job as coach, you know, not just husband, but really as a coach, just to get as much juice out of you as possible and to pad that total as much as possible. And she looked at me and she was like, I want 380. I go, well, after you do this, you can do whatever you want. So she ended up, she pulled 370.
It was a little slow.
It was a little slow, which I thought it was a very good call. And then we put 380 on, and I kid you not, this little woman pulled what I thought was one of the longest deadlifts. I probably took three breaths while yelling, and she locked it out. There was nothing stopping her from pulling.
Because I knew that a 2% might have doubted me, and I was like, I am not letting this bar down.
She put it down and basically was like, I told you I wanted 380.
I love that. That perseverance. It's awesome.
It still wasn't 400. But what was really cool to me about that was obviously the strain. I don't think I had a 2.5 pound plate left in me. But like I had all these awesome, stronger guys coming up and shaking my hand, saying like, that was awesome. And like people like, I'm not anybody, but there's like so many other stronger people out there. And they were like, that was so great. So that was really cool. And even like in the crowd, there was a little girl that came up to me and she, you know, after wars and everything, everyone was leaving. She was walking out and she was like, you were so fun to watch. And she was probably like 9 or 10, but just that was really cool.
And honestly, like I have to admit that if it doesn't matter what the pull is, honestly, the weight, it's how much effort that is what people want to see in your last deadlift. They don't care if it's 110 once again or whatever else, but if you strain your you strain your balls off, basically, you know, people get excited. People want to see you persevere through that entire lift. And that's what she did. And that's why so many people came up to her was like, that was awesome. I wouldn't have pulled that long. I would have given up. Most of us would have given up going, this shit ain't going.
Same.
He would have passed out. It's like kind of shoes. But I think, like, to talk about how, like, calm he was for his meet, I think it was similar for me for this meet. I'm always a nervous Nelly. I'm not the most confident lifter. I'm just not. I have become more so over the years. But for this last meet, similar to Bruce, like, I felt like I was more present. You know, it's easy to get wrapped up in, you know, what other lifters or your teammates are doing and everyone's chatting and, you know, doing whatever. But, like, I really felt like I could tell you each song that was playing. I can tell you, you know, what I was wearing. I know how every weight felt. I remember it because I was present. I channeled the energy just like he did for his meet. And it really works out in the end, usually, when you channel that energy versus just being pissed off and, you know, wasting all the energy and then you're tired.
I love that you kind of spoke about that, because you'll see those lifters that are walking around pacing and they look like they just are going nuts through the whole day, and then they gas out at the end. And yeah. Whereas the more, I don't want to say stoic, but I guess stoic lifter that's just more calm, collected, but then you see them explode on that last deadlift, right? Because they conserve their energy throughout the whole day. I don't think people really understand how much goes into those 9 lifts throughout the day. Like, you'll tell, like, just a regular person, like, oh, I do 3 squats, 3 benches, 3 deadlifts. Like, really? That's it? It's like, it's a little more than that, right?
I mean, at his meet, I watched someone take ammonia for their opening squat, bench, all 3 of their deadlifts. And I just thought, wow, I bet they feel awesome.
Yeah, no.
it's just a lot. And it's just not really, shouldn't really be necessary.
And, you know, the funny part is, like, even through my last pulls, like, people kept handing me, like, ammonia. I was like, I'm good. I was,
almost want to feel that.
Yeah, I was almost so, I don't say zoned in, but I felt, I started to feel like crap at that point, but at some point we all have to. But I was so zoned in, and I was just confident in my ability. I was like, I'm good. And even my last one, which, you know what, normally I probably do on my last pull of my last everything, just because. But once again, I was so pumped up by everybody around me that I didn't need one more distraction to take me out of what I needed to do.
Exactly. Confidence is a big one. I think you're talking about the ammonia and then pacing around and everything like that. I don't know if it's a confidence thing or what, but if you have confidence going into it, I don't think you need all those outside factors. You know, like, somebody the other day joked around with me. They're like, if you need to have your favorite song on for an 80% squat, then you probably need to be changing up the way your program goes. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's true.
I don't know.
I mean, you know, there'll always be training sessions where, you know, even during the week, sometimes when I'm exhausted, you know what, I will use some ammonia because I need something to kick me in the butt a little bit. But very rarely on max effort, especially because, I mean, I've cursed her with my same faults of being very technical and breaking apart everything. And, you know, unfortunately, nothing's ever good enough, but it really is. I mean, you're number, 4 of all time at 114? Number 5 at 114-pound weight class. And in fact, I just saw the woman's board at Westside. She'd be the strongest 114 to ever go through there if she trained there. So, you know, little Mama Jama is, you know, she's something to brag about. But it's just one of those things where I want to feel everything. I want to know how my body is. I want to know, yep. I want to be present in here so I can figure out, you know what, next set, I need to do this.
Yep. Exactly. 100% agree. Nicole, if people want to follow you, reach out to you, I highly suggest it because, one, you're not only a great lifter, but you put out some inspiring stuff. But 3, it's your recipes with all the food stuff. Like, come on, like, too good. Yeah.
She's in the background making more meal prep right now.
The best. Some of those, like, Rice Krispie treats you make, it looks like they look so good all the time. I'm like, yeah, oh,
I ate them all last night.
Bruce, can you go ahead and tell your Donnie Thompson story and we'll get you out of here?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, babe. So, and this was fun. So back in, I want to guess 2011, I was coming home from the Outer Banks with a with my girlfriend at the time. And first off, I don't know how we made it through the mountains. I was driving 1991 Cutlass that I was driving a 91 Cutlass at that time. And we were driving back through the mountains, and I believe it was somewhere in West Virginia because we're coming back to Ohio. And there was a McDonald's in the middle of the mountains, basically. I was like, oh, well, we need to take a break. I'm starving. And to put in perspective, I'm 198 pounds this time in my life. So I'm you know, well more than 100 pounds lighter. And we walk inside this McDonald's, and this statue of a man is just standing at the register. And I was like, that's a big dude. You know, he turns to the side, and I'm looking at him, and like, I feel like I recognize this guy. You know, I mean, we've all looked at the powerlifting magazines and everything else. Yep. And I'm like, I swear I've seen him before. And he's wearing an Inzer Advance t-shirt. And all of a sudden, the McDonald's says, Thompson. I was like, holy shit. I was like, that's Donnie Thompson. So I walk up to him. I walk up to him. You know, you never have a good looking chick walk up to you. It's always some, you know, young guy going, are you Donnie Thompson? And he was like, you know, he was like, yeah. I was like, and I didn't really know what to say. I'm like, I'm a huge fan. You know, I'm a powerlifter. I was like, I saw you in the magazines and everything. And, you know, I was a nervous Nelly. And he goes, come find me after you're done eating. And he goes, I'll have something for you. I was like, okay, great. Like, at this point in my life, like, I could give a shit less if he, you know, had anything for me. But we got done eating. I went over to him. He goes, why don't you come to the back of my truck for a real quick second? I think he was in like a Toyota 4Runner. And he opens up his back trunk and he hands me a bunch of wrist wraps, hands me a bunch of magazines and just random powerlifting stuff that, you know, it was Donnie Thompson's. It was the coolest thing that could ever have been done to a young powerlifter who, you know, I wanted to be that guy one day to squat 1,000 pounds. I wanted to be like this guy, you know, right. Who doesn't when they're reading these magazines. And for him to go out of his way to, you know, he gave me, I think, like 2 or 3 pair of wrist wraps. He gave me like 3 magazines. I should have had him fucking sign it, honestly. I wish I did. But it was just when he came back out from super training out from Sacramento, because it was all Mark Bell stuff. And, you know, but I was in shock and awe that, you know, Donnie Thompson, the greatest powerlifter to ever live, you know, at the time, well, I still think he's number one. But, you know, to take time out of his day and out of his family's time just to give me, you know, some magazines and some wrist wraps and whatever. And I mean, to this day, I mean, that was 2000. Well, that was 10 years ago. And the funny part is I met him just after that, probably about another year or two later, down in, I believe it was like maybe Greenville, North Carolina, down at Travis's Mash's gym. They were doing a seminar. God bless Travis Mash. He let us stay at his house. Really nice guy. But, you know, he talked about, you know, it was big YouTube. Everything was YouTube back in the day. And I mean, this was probably one of the most God-loving individuals I ever met, you know, opened his house to us and everything else. And, you know, him and all the other lifters are talking about, you know, the comments that people would leave on YouTube and how, you know, all these horrible comments, because I mean, powerlifting was hated then. I mean, it's even more hated now, probably. I don't know. Just the amount of comments. There's just more people to talk about now. But, you know, they would all, you know, want to be like, you know, where are you from? You know, let's meet up in a parking lot kind of a thing. You know, so me listening to this is hilarious, first off, because, you know, this is the wide world of multiplied powerlifting that I never even heard of. And I ended up meeting Donnie again, and he remembered me, which was kind of cool. And then years later, right before I squatted my first, I think it was my first 1,100 pounds, he was up in Cleveland and he was like, hey, Bruce. I was like, holy smokes. I was like, once again, like, we're not, it's not like he needs to remember who I am, but he took the time and even the second to say, hey, Bruce, you know, let me show you my body tempering. He was doing a clinic up in Cleveland, Ohio. And it was just, well, A, after he did it to me, I was absolutely sold. But not that, you know, spotlight, Donnie Thompson. But, you know, just an incredibly nice guy. Always went out of his way to just say hi to, you know, a very average lifter. And I mean, and just some kid who was just stoked and just wanted to eat, breathe, and live powerlifting. So, you know, it was just the coolest thing that some guy did. And that, you know, we all looked up to, but definitely changed my outlook on powerlifting almost immediately, just in that one instance.
How amazing is that? Donnie Thompson, if you were to make a Mount Rushmore of powerlifters, him, and I mean, you probably put Travis Mash on there too as well, just because of like his accomplishments too. Like, but Donnie is like a saint in my opinion.
You know what? If I had to pick four, this is a great fucking question. If I had to pick four, you know what? You have to put Hoff, obviously. Hoff.
Yep.
Donnie Thompson.
Then it gets tricky after that.
You know what? I will put. So I'm going to have to go with a five in no particular order. I have to do five. So just men alone. And then if we want to add females in, we can do that later. But Donnie Thompson, Hoff, Ed Cohn. You can't not. I am a huge Captain Kurt Kowalski fan. I am the biggest Kurt Kowalski fan. And honestly, I think somebody that is completely overlooked that I think is just as good as Eddie Cohn, but he doesn't have the publicity, is Kali Ronison. I butchered his last name. But I'll have seen the information. The gentleman at 198, I don't know if he went 198, 220, maybe 242. He totaled almost 2,700 pounds at 198, I think.
Holy smokes.
Or 220. And he's done single ply, multi ply. The guy's out of Finland, and he deserves a lot more recognition than he gets to being probably one of the best lifters pound for pound of all time. So man, I would put him up there as a close fifth, but I'm a huge Kurt Kowalski fan. I hope to God that before his time is gone, I can meet that guy and go from there.
I would maybe go Donnie. I'd say Louis, just because it's Louis.
Sure.
Ernie France.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, that'd be three. And it's hard not to go Ed Cohn. That's probably four. That's my four. With an alternative, I put Dave Tate just because what Elite FTS done for me personally. So that's about it.
No, you almost have to break it down into like coaches and or lifters.
Yeah, I guess because I was thinking, yeah, that's a big one. Like if you had coaches and lifters, that'd be even easier for me to do. Women is really hard too as well. I mean, you got women, Amy, you got Laura.
Yeah, Laura. Becca Swanson has to be there. She was the forefront of everybody.
Jen Thompson.
And then I'm trying to think of, it was on the one documentary, but you know, then we can go either, you know, the original of who started everything, which she was an Australian woman.
I've heard of her name.
I don't know her name.
Yeah.
We'll have to interject a subtitle there of her, you know, her or, you know, I you know, she's one of the forefront women. I'd have to put her up there. So Laura, Becca, Jen Thompson, and then the Australian.
Yeah, I agree with all that. That's same with me as well. That's an interesting conversation because, like you said, we could coaches, lifters, but then too, like there's some people that were like less than 5 years in that have some crazy numbers, but they didn't have the longevity of some people too as well. I love longevity. I think that's an interesting thing. You and I have talked about, I think, that off camera last time, and then we really haven't talked about this much, but just longevity of a powerlifting career is, to me, is incredible because like you can choose to put the 100 pounds extra on your total, but like at what cost of your career is that going to be, you know? Like if you can put 10, 15, wouldn't that be a little bit, I don't know. It's up to you, obviously. Every person's different.
No, I honestly, it's been, I don't want to say it's been obviously when I started working with Brock. I mean, I went from about 1900 to 2600 in 4.5 years. And like I said, when I was joking around with my rest days are even programmed every single day for those 4.5, 5 years, every single day was programmed. It was either rest or training. And I mean, I have to say that I did go from 242 up to 308 within those 4.5 years. So obviously it wasn't like I stayed the same weight and got stronger. So I was
Right.
able to move more mass, but you know, still to the fact of, you know, I had to fill out my weight class. But it was still a slow build. I mean, I think after my technical ability was fixed. I mean, after I fixed my technique, I went up 200 pounds almost immediately. And all that was fixing my technique. I really didn't get that much stronger because if you don't use the gear correct, you know what, then it doesn't really matter. I know guys who bench almost 600 pounds raw and bench, you know, in a double or triple ply shirt, you know, 650. You know,
Really?
I bench five at my best. I bench about 550 raw. In a SDP, my best press is mid 800s. So it's all about how you can use the gear.
I have a question for you. I have an opinion on it, but I want to get your opinion. I want to get your thoughts on this. So, lifter, let's say lifter A, right? Let's say he's 275er, right? He consistently stays the same weight. But he is consistently getting stronger over time, but there's no real body changes per se. What do you think is the biggest attributing factor in how they're able to continue to add to their total without really necessarily gaining more muscle mass or losing? You know what I mean? Obviously, they're not
Sure.
losing.
Honestly, it is going to be more just of the neuromuscular recruitment that they're going to be able to do. In my total opinion, because you're just able to contract your muscles that much harder.
The reason why I ask that is because that's a question a lot of people have is they're like, how does this person stay at this weight, but they continue to start? It's because, like you said it, you nailed it. That's why I asked it. They know how to get their muscles to fire all at the same time and to move at the right, you know.
It was, you know, I cheated a bit. I did go to school for this, so I had the answer.
Yeah, exactly. But some
No,
people,
but I mean,
but some lifters
you.
don't understand that. They really don't. And I think that's an easy thing for them to kind of comprehend. It's like either have
I
it or you
mean,
don't.
we talked about this last time where the one guy was fourth or fifth generation farmer at 165 pounds, and he was squatting mid 700s.
Yep.
You know, but his brother was just as strong without trying, you know. And that's one of those things where their body was just adapted differently than me. So I started out a cross country runner. I in high school I couldn't bench my own body weight. And I was 125 pounds, you know. I couldn't bench one, I was 127. I could only bench 125.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's
Know.
certain body types, like who was the first person to who pulled okay, who pulled the thousand?
Andy Bolton.
Look at his like knees. They're like per I mean they're huge. You know what I mean? He's got the
Well,
perfect legs to deadlift, you know what I mean?
you know, I made this joke the other day. I was like, you know, Andy Bolton squatted over 1,200 pounds. I was like, he pulled over, you know, he pulled 1,000 pounds. I was like, but he only benched mid 500s because his arms are so fucking long, you know. So, you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, I mean, the dude was brutally strong. His back strength, my God.
Unbelievable. Somebody I look up to so much as far as like watching vi lifting videos
Just
from.
incredible. I mean,
Unbelievable
just,
body structure.
you know, and Louis and everybody else says this, and you know, it's not just me that, you know, the gear we have these days, it really magnifies your squat and really magnifies your bench. But at the end of the day, you can't fake a deadlift.
Yeah, I 100%
So
agree.
you'll see people squat 1,000, bench 7 or whatever, and then they pull mid 500s. That's how strong they actually are.
Interesting.
So,
You probably just triggered a lot. You triggered a lot of people just now.
But, you know, and that's you know, you watch that though through other people lifting and everything else, and, you know, or you'll see, you know, a lot more raw people have a lower squat, a decent bench, and a higher pull. Well, their back's stronger than their legs.
Yep. And that's me. That's me 100%.
But that's very common. I mean, I was like that when I started. And then my squat went up and my deadlift slowly goes up over time, you know, maybe 5-10 pounds a year.
So the deadlift's so tricky because it's so taxing on you. Like,
yes,
I deadlift every Saturday, but I don't deadlift with the intensity that I'm, you know, to where I can do it every Saturday. It's, you know, it's programmed out, but it's a lot of work doing deadlifts, man. That's why I think that one is so hard to get up and going, especially the more advanced you get.
And if you think about it, if you get stronger in the squat and the deadlift, if you get stronger in the squat and the bench, you're going to be more fatigued walking into deadlift.
Yes.
So this number is always going to hopefully go up, but it may not go up as everything else, even though, you know, you're pulling a massive more amount in the gym or whatever else, because a lot of people pull fresh. And that's why I always recommend, and I will never do it any other way, I will always squat, then deadlift.
Oh, okay. That is interesting. Never even thought about it.
Because at that point, you then know your weaknesses of your deadlift to then either add in the accessory work midweek or on that same day.
What do you do for grip work?
Nothing. Honestly, grip work is more established with how you set your upper back and how you torque your arms.
Bruce is killing it today, man. I love it.
You're just handing me softballs.
But here's the thing. These are stuff that people don't understand. Truthfully, they think that they need to do more farmer's walks with what is it? The handle, you know, talking about.
Yeah. Back grip. You know what? Well, I joke around that my nutrition professor back in college always used to ask a question and he used to throw an imaginary softball at us before we answer the question. He goes, softball here. And he used to then ask us a question. Dr. David Venata, my God, is he the most incredible human being? But I digress. Yeah. So, and that's the big thing that people don't get. It's really setting yourself for success and not necessarily having to rebuild or get things stronger. It's just able to torque and get stronger in other places that will hold your grip. So, like, your upper back is probably the most important part of your grip. Because if you can't torque your arms all the way through, it doesn't matter.
Yep, exactly. 100% agree. Well, Bruce, we'll get you out of here, man. Last question of the day.
Yeah.
What are you grateful for?
Everything. I mean, I'm grateful to be able to compete with my wife, to have a normal job, to be able to afford everything that we do, and to have fun. I mean, it's never been an easy ride, but I'm just very thankful for the people in my life, because without that, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
I love it, man. Bruce, if people want to follow you, reach out to you, how can they follow you?
Instagram, I believe it's Bruce_Mason_308. And come have fun on the journey.
Bruce, love talking with you. Could talk with you for hours. Always love learning from you. One of the first people that reached out to me after my powerlifting meet was Bruce. He said, man, I hope you had fun. And two, I think you might have said something the night before. He just said, have fun. I kept thinking about that throughout my meet. So I'm thankful for you, brother.
Hey, my pleasure.
Everybody, make sure you follow Bruce, follow his wife as well, Nicole, and everybody, stay strong.